Okay, Amy, I have a crazy question for you.
Yeah.
If you could be any kind of animal, what animal would you be?
Well, I have two different things I'm vacillating between. Like, I love dolphins. I know Jen says she loves dolphins. Oh, but I won't say that because you're making a face. But the other one that I really think I want to be is a little red miniature dachshund. Now, our last dog was named Hildy, little red miniature dachshund. And here's why I want to be a little red miniature dachshund. Your whole purpose in life is to eat snacks and lay in the sun. Oh, and to boss people who laugh at you and love you anyway. You know? I'm like, that looks like the life to me. So I would like to be a little red miniature dachshund. How about you?
Well, you guessed correctly, because when I asked you what you would want to be, I almost said, and don't pick the one that I'm going to say. And then you picked the one I was going to say.
Well, no. That's not my final choice.
Okay.
Tell us why you would like to be a dolphin.
You know, I used to play dolphin as a kid. I mean, we used to go to Marineland and SeaWorld. I mean, Shamu and the orcas were great, but the dolphins I just loved. And then all summer long, we would go to the community pool and I would spend like 4 hours each afternoon there. And I would just play dolphin the entire time and just do these fancy dives and twirl around under the water. I think back now, any lifeguard watching me must have thought I was like, seriously, there was something wrong with me. But when I grew up and got older, I love the fact that they're so intelligent.
Yes. I was about to say, you're brainy girl. That's the brainy animal.
Oh, but there's something about just the freedom and the playfulness,
yes.
You know, the way that they jump up and splash, there's just something so fun and joyous. And where I live, sometimes we can go down to the beach and see them in the wild. They've come up into the bay and they're jumping and playing. And it's just, I don't know, there's a longing there to just be that free to play together.
Yeah, we see them on the coast of North Carolina too. And I will go and sit and just watch the surface of the water for hours just to see them. So we can't be animals. But I'm so thankful that God gave us animals as just one of our greatest gifts.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, the podcast that equips you to lose who you're not, love who you are, and live your one life well.
Today, we're discussing what we learned from our interview with Jen Bleakley, author of Pawverbs, 100 Inspirations to Delight an Animal Lover's Heart.
Many of us believe a house isn't a home unless there is fur on the floor. Pawverbs, a collection of 100 short stories featuring real-life animals, presents the godly wisdom of Proverbs in a whimsical way, inviting us to explore deep spiritual truths alongside tales of our lovable pets.
In this book, you will meet guinea pig sisters with a celebrity status,
a street smart cat who finds his way home,
a black lab with a rap sheet,
a dog and dolphin who are best friends,
a bearded dragon who enjoys a good soak,
a life-saving Great Dane, and many more.
Like little fuzzy, hairy, scaly, or feathery ambassadors, animals are a gift from God to point us to himself, to the one who promises to never leave us, is always available to listen, and who loves us more than we can fathom.
If you are looking for encouragement and inspiration, or even just a kibble-sized morsel of wisdom, Pawverbs is sure to delight your pet-loving soul.
Sherry, this is going to be such a fun conversation today. We're braced for both laughter and tears. And we're starting with animals show us who we're not. We are not in control.
Why does everything have to come back down to that C word? Oh my goodness. But you are so right. You know, one of the things I have told people over the years when people ask, you know, are you a cat person or a dog person? And I'd love to hear from our listeners as to where they fall on that continuum. But I am distinctly a dog person who has become a cat convert. Like, my life started out very much with a dog. I grew up with a Samoyed when I was a kid. And then actually our first pet, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but our first dog was a Samoyed that we showed to a champion.
Oh,
like, I literally used to go into dog show rings and I actually put one point on her. We paid a handler to do the rest, but that was a definite stage of learning. We couldn't control whether she lost or won. I could make her as beautiful as possible. And I could wash her till that white coat was pure white and fluffy and perfectly groomed. And sometimes we came out with championship rosette and sometimes we came home with nothing. So, and then you remember my dog Shotzi,
yeah.
Who died 4 years ago. You know, probably the funniest thing with her, that when I used to talk to Kathy Lipp by Skype, that if I forgot to crate Shotzi, because we had an indoor crate for her where she slept at night, I would suddenly become aware that she was upstairs in the kids' bathroom eating the cat food. And I would yell at her and she would come dashing down the stairs. And finally it got to the point that I would become aware that she had just eaten the cat food, because things would get really, really quiet, except I wouldn't notice that. What I would suddenly become aware of is that she was just crating herself. Like, she would suddenly come into the room where I was and she would crate herself. And I would be like, oh, darn, she's gone upstairs and she has eaten the cat food again. And what Jonathan told me later is that he had watched her. She would creep upstairs one step at a time. And she would go up one step and then pause, one step and pause, one step and pause, literally tiptoe on little paw, you know, 30 pound Kazon paws into eat the cat food. And then she would come barreling down like an elephant. And then she would go crate herself for punishment. Like, yeah, I'm done.
She put herself in timeout.
She did. She's like, well, I've had the food. There's nothing you can do. So I'll just come on into my crate now. It's like, oh my word. Talking about lack of control. So, and then where we are now, of course, is the Gregory home of geriatric cats. And all I'm going to say about that is they are ruining pretty much everything we own, but I'm not going to give any more detail. Just imagine. We have a diabetic cat who's in remission, but still has symptoms. And then we have a cat with kidney disease. So it's very exciting. What's really been fun is watching Anne-Marie. She has a brand new kitten she's had for 2 months, Rufio. And that cat is destroying her schedule. Oh. It is the funniest thing to listen to. I'm not funny, really. I'm trying to be sympathetic and empathetic. But let's just say she's starting to understand parenthood in ways that she didn't used to understand it before. Oh. So yes, we are definitely not in control. So how have animals in your life taught you that you are not in control?
Well, I grew up with cats, no exposure to dogs at all. But I have a husband who is not only deathly allergic of cats, but he's sort of pathologically averse to cats.
Aww.
I mean, if you met your cats, yes, you could never hate cats, especially Rafiki, who's the purr box, right? So, and Dusty with her stilettos.
Yep.
But from the very beginning, we got a dog. Mm-hmm. And from the very beginning, we were out of control because we didn't even plan to get a dog. So the way it went was, Barry was a band director. He had a band booster president who we absolutely loved. Her name was Cindy. And she had a dog who had puppies. Well, she named one of the puppies after Barry. No. All the kids called Barry BC. They didn't call him Mr. Carroll. Uh-huh. He was young and, you know, kind of hip at that point. We're so not hip. But anyway, so all the kids called him BC, and she named one of the puppies BC because she said he pushed all the rest out of the way to eat. So we had to meet the puppy that was named after Barry.
Oh, no.
And then we met the puppy named after Barry. And, you know, that was all she wrote. We took him home. So we had not even planned to get a dog. So out of control from the beginning. Oh, yeah. And he threw up in the car on the way home. It was a sign. But we had that dog for 14 years.
Wow.
And BC was the love of my life and the bane of my existence. I mean, I spent 14 years chasing BC around our neighborhood because he was Houdini dog. Oh, and wow. I could tell you story after story of this escape artist dog. We could not keep him in. But one of my favorite stories about BC was that we moved into a larger house that we were redoing at one point, and we had this neighbor next door that just thought we were the trash next door. I don't know how to say it. She was this very affluent Southern lady, and we were not. Let's just put it that way. We were not. And she made her disdain of us very evident.
Gotcha.
So one day we came home, we had been gone all day, and she calls and she says, Amy, BC has been barking at my guests all day. And I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. I don't know what could have happened, because he was a pain, but he wasn't a barker generally. So I couldn't have imagined what happened to BC that day until I went outside. I had been having trouble with slugs eating my plants. And so I did what Southerners do, which I read about, which is we pour beer into a pan to drown the slugs.
Oh, no.
Except the pan was bone dry.
Oh, no.
So BC had gotten drunk and howled at the neighbors all day.
Oh my goodness. Okay, that sets a whole new bar for what it means to be out of control.
Out of control. Totally.
That is hysterical.
I just couldn't muster up being very sorry.
So did you ever tell her he wasn't just barking, he was actually barking at her drunk?
No, I pretended to be sorry that she had treated us like the trash next door. Oh, my.
Oh, my word. Okay. So animals show us who we're not mm-hmm. and we're not in control. So moving on to love who you are, animals help us love who we are. And how do you see that play out? What would you say your statement is specifically here?
Well, the best thing about animals and our pets is we are unconditionally loved. Mm. And so BC, after he died, we spent some time without a dog, but then we got Hildy. Oh my goodness. That was when I became dog crazy. So Hildy was a little miniature dachshund, and the boys started calling her mom's tumor. They would be like, where's mom's tumor? And the reason is that wherever I was, there was Hildy. And if I sat down, she was on me. BC was more like a cat. Like, he really could have cared less about us. It was very interesting. But Hildy was, I was her person. And Barry was the alpha dog in the house, but I said I was the love slave. So
yep.
She loved me unconditionally. I loved her unconditionally. And my heritage is German. So Barry said, great. Now there are two bossy German women in the house. So
he did not.
So anyway, I loved that dog, and she was with me everywhere I went. And we promised we weren't going to cry, but now I'm going to cry because Hildy passed away about 3 years ago. And I miss her terribly, especially during COVID. I've missed her so, having a pet so much. But, you know, she was always with me. But towards the end of her life, she just had a hard time getting around. And so I bought a basket that I could put under my desk so she could be comfortable and be near me. And that unconditional love of these animals, there's just nothing like it. Yeah. How about you?
Well, I just want to really affirm that Anne Marie visited with a friend of hers a few months ago, and it's somebody she's known since college. And both of them have been kind of struggling with their friendship, and they've each formed some new friendships, and they were struggling with why the new friendships seem so much easier. These new friendships with completely different people seem easier than the friendship, this older 10-year friendship they have with each other. And they came to the conclusion that they have all this baggage. Like, they knew each other in college when they were less mature and less healthy, and they've had all these conflicts over the years, and they've invested heavily in their friendship, but it's still, when they think about talking to each other, there's like the sigh of, okay, gird your loins, here we go, you know, kind of thing. And I was thinking to myself, wow, most of our relationships with animals aren't like that. They don't come with baggage. You know, even all the mopping I'm doing in the house, it's just physical work that needs to be done. But these relationships we have with our animals are basically uncomplicated. They're very simple. You know, our animals come with their unique personalities, and they pretty much stay the same all the time. And with the cats, I know that their way of ignoring me is their way of showing me that they love me. Like, whenever I come home from being gone, Dusty looks at me like, I thought we got rid of you. I thought I finally had the man to myself. You know, I take better care of him than you do. You could just leave now and we'd all be so much happier without you. And I'm like, glad to see you too, Dusty. And
nice to have a cat with a crush on your husband.
Oh yeah. My goodness. So, so much. But there is something very simple and very sweet and very, very basic that is so appealing. So for my statement of love who you are more courageous than you know. And I found this in caring for my animals. And I'm going to say, especially with a good team. Mm. So, you know, years ago when we first moved here, so we're going on probably 13 years ago. Okay, I won't worry about the math. We'd only had Chauncey for a few years when she suddenly became very, very ill. And I had to make some very difficult, potentially costly decisions about her care at like 3 o'clock in the morning, which was totally overwhelming for an HSP. And, you know, I was still exhausted from the move, and I was in the midst of a new job, and I was having to figure all this kind of stuff out. And what I discovered was I could do it. I actually could make some wise decisions. And I ended up with a vet who was just such a godsend, who helped us medically support her. And she came through that. that time. That doesn't always happen that way, but you know, it's one of those things that did happen that time. And then a few years ago, we're going on 2 years since Rafiki was diagnosed with diabetes. And oh my goodness, 2 years ago, I would not have believed I could draw blood from a cat or that I could give a cat a shot, let alone run a curve of testing the glucose, you know, 10 times in a single day or keeping the spreadsheets or anything. But here I am. And again, fortunately, he's in remission. I don't have to do all that kind of stuff anymore. But I'll admit, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, I actually was able to step up and learn how to do all that stuff with a cat, of all things, you know, not the most cooperative animals. And, you know, one of the things that we're in the midst, the season we're in right now with geriatric cats, is that we are, as a family, talking openly about death, which is something neither Daniel nor I did growing up. Like, and when we had got pets, when the kids were little, we didn't even think to talk to them about, okay, well, it's a kitten now, but someday it'll get older and it's going to die. We didn't, I mean, nothing like that. We had no family background to teach us to do it. And so we just got them. And I guess part of our brains were like, they'll just live forever and we won't have to deal with that. Wouldn't that be nice? So literally, as a family, we are evaluating where our older cats are at on a daily basis based on a quality of life scale, which is really, really helpful to be able to kind of have these criteria to evaluate and go, nope, today's another okay day, or nope, today's a day to call the vet. And it's hard, but it's necessary. And there's a part of me that's like, finally, I'm learning to do this thing rather than avoid it just because it's hard and painful. Again, on this planet, death is going to be a part of life. And knowing that we can have the courage to face it and that there are people who can help us face it, whether it's a vet or tools like the quality of life scale, it makes me feel like I'm adulting better than I used to.
Well, and I think it's so interesting that you brought up personally, and also with Anne Marie, and as I reflect, I think too that animals are a source of growth for us in our lives, because it becomes about taking care of another life.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Somebody that we love, some furry being that we love other than ourselves. And so they are part of our growth. And so that leads us into animals help us to lead our one life well.
Now, you told me about a video I haven't seen yet, but I am looking forward to watching it. So tell me and tell our listeners about it.
Yeah, I need to find it and we need to put it in our Facebook group. Mm-hmm. But a friend of mine posted this video that just had me enthralled the other day. I actually watched it several times. It was a short video, but it was a little girl in Australia. She was probably, I'd say, 4 years old or so. And she had climbed to the top of this post, was perched up on the top of this post about horse height. Mm-hmm. And she was singing, and the horses had gathered around this little girl. Aww. As she sang. One horse in particular, he couldn't get enough of her. He was standing so close to her. And as you watch the video, he even like ooches a little bit closer. It was like he was trying to get as close to her as he possibly could. And he had his face like right, like sort of on her lap. And she took her face and put her face on his face. And she was singing to this horse. It took my breath away. I can't explain it, so the listeners will have to watch it. But it was this beautiful moment, this very, very pure moment. And it felt like to me, this is what creation is supposed to look like. This is what God meant when he made everything, is that we're to have this communion with the furry critters around us, just like that little girl was having in that moment. And we know that, as Lisa Turker says, we're living between two gardens. So at the original creation, Adam and Eve had that kind of communion with the animals, but that kind of communion with animals will be restored at the end. Mm. I love Isaiah 11:6. It says, "The wolf will live with the lamb, the leopard will lie down with the goat, the calf and the lion, and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them." Mm. And we know that that's a prophecy about Christ, but that video of that little girl, the little child leading them, just made me have that feeling of what life restored will look like in creation.
I love that. So let's talk a little bit about how animals help us live our one life well as we are still here on earth. For me, the two things that really stand out, the first one is joy. And I know you've met Rafiki, and as often as he can, he needs me. And I don't just mean N-E-E-D. I mean, he gets on me, and he's what? He's 13, 14 years old. He's way past being a kitten, but he was a bottle baby. He was a runt who was rejected by actually two mothers. And And so he bonded to humans. And so he will get there with his paws and he will start sucking on the blanket that's on me. And he will do that purr that you can hear from the other room. And he will just sit and knead. And there is something very relaxing and very restful about that. But then just the crescendo of his purr, I'm like, okay, how do you not join in and feel that sense of joy that he is exuding? And then I'm also thinking back to when Dusty, our little black 7-pound cat, broke her leg. Now, there was this unrequited love relationship. Absolutely. Her best friend in the whole world was Shotzi, my Kazon dog, except Shotzi didn't know that. And so Dusty spent her life following Shotzi around. She groomed her every morning. She would come up and lick her face. And if Shotzi shook her head, she would go for the paws, like literally, you know, like washing her feet for her. She's the only cat I knew who would hack up a hairball, and it was dog hair, not her own. She was that dedicated. And so Shotzi ignored her and Dusty adored her. And but then Dusty broke her leg. And it was the one time, it was that period of time that Dusty was in a leg cast that Shotzi paid attention to her and would literally entertain her. We would get them together in the morning and Shotzi would roll on her back and flail her legs like an idiot. And it would just be like, look at me, as if it was a sibling trying to make the hurt sibling or the sick sibling laugh. And for that 6 weeks that Dusty was in recovery, Shotzi was her constant companion, an utter goofball. And as soon as that cast was off, she went back to ignoring her. But Amazing. It was so funny to watch her do her best to cheer her up and kind of be a nursemaid. So joy, animals help us live our one life well through joy. And then I think what I hear from you and missing Hildy and what I miss desperately right now is companionship. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things Jen said was that during times of grief, we have an increased need for understanding and a decreased ability to understand. And then I thought to myself, we also have a decreased ability to be understood. Yes. Like in times of grief, I am less understandable to others and to myself. And it makes me think of my childhood dog, Nikki. He used to curl up outside my window when I was a kid and I could just hear him snuffling around in the dirt. He would turn around 3 times before settling. And I would just talk through the window at him and tell him all my troubles. And he always understood. Mm. And he would stay awake and listen. I could just tell he was awake. And then when I would stop talking, he would put his head down. And I just, again, that unconditional loving presence. You know, he never got bored of me. He never ever said, could you just cut to the chase? You're using too many words. Like, I don't need the stories. Just give me the bottom line and I'll solve it. You know, he was right. Just that presence. And so one of the decisions I have made is that I'm getting a puppy.
So excited for you.
It has been 4 years since Shotzi died and the isolation of 2020, not being able to go see my friends, not being able to hang out with you and be with people who provide me with companionship and I provide them with companionship. It's just slaying me. And there's also with Shotzi, I had wanted to train her to be a therapy dog, to go and read with children who are struggling readers and to visit nursing homes. And so a few weeks ago, I emailed every Kazon breeder in Oregon, Washington, California, Arizona, and Nevada. Which isn't that many.
I was going to say, is that a long list?
No, okay. It's not. And it's not a very popular breed. But all I'm going to say is that there are litters planned for early 2021. So stay tuned.
Oh, well, I'm so excited. And I'm going to live vicariously through you because, well, there are many reasons. I'm not sure I can go through the death of a pet again, to be quite honest with you. That's a big part of it for me. But also, we're hoping that Barry and I get to travel again someday. Yeah. And so we're not choosing to do it now. But let me just say that Barry every day sends me dachshund reels and Instagram every day. And at first I thought, I finally said, are you trying to say that you want to get one? Because if he had said yes, I would not have been able to hold back. But he said, no, I'm just enjoying them so much and just sharing them with you. So we're not actually getting a dog, but we're watching other people's dogs every day.
I love it. All right. What is the grit for you in all of this, Amy?
The grit is just what I just talked about, is resisting getting another dog, because we know, and you've lived this out with your geriatric cats, that they have a lifespan that's shorter than ours and they deserve and demand a lot of attention. So the grit right now is not getting another one right now, although I do feel like we will have another dachshund in our lifetime.
That makes me happy to hear.
Right now, we're just enjoying other people's pets.
I do see a lot of people getting pandemic puppies, but of course, you know, I'm looking to justify my own choice here. So for me, I'd say the grace in all of this is learning to recognize that welcome and farewell will always coexist here on Earth. It's really amazing watching our aging cats play with Anne Marie's kitten. You know, we have these two generations together. And I shared with you an email from Nadia Boltz Weber, where she wrote the email from the ER of a veterinary hospital. Mm-hmm. One of the things she said is she felt like she needed a chaplain there. And I'm like, yes, there should be chaplains in emergency vet waiting rooms, because it is so hard. It's so traumatic. But I just wanted to read a couple things here. She said, maybe the grief we feel when we lose a pet touches the grief we feel for not being loved in the way we needed to be by the human in our lives. I mean, our pets love us in ways humans never can. And in turn, we love our pets in a way we never love other humans. There is something pure about these beasties. And then she said, it's a grief uncomplicated by the ambiguity that accompanies the loss of humans. Back to that idea that our human relationships are just way more complicated, which is fine. That's the way God created us. But there is something just so pure. And I really resonated with that. And you know what it reminded me of? Do you remember the movie Homeward Bound? Mm-hmm. Anne Marie used to call that the two puppies, one kitty movie. I want to see the two puppies, one kitty movie. And, you know, I've seen it probably dozens of times and I still cannot watch the ending. In fact, I'm going to try not to choke up just thinking about the ending. You know, of course, the younger dog makes it home and then, you know, you're watching the hill. Did the older dog make it? And just the way our hearts well up with joy when you see, yeah, the older dog made it too, that incredible reunion scene. I just feel like that is such a visceral anticipation of the day that our lives will be nothing but welcome home. And things will be just the way you described, that we will be in communion with the animals and things will be restored to the way that they are supposed to be, the way God always created us and intended for things to be. We hope you've enjoyed episode number 210 of Grit and Grace, the podcast.
Listeners, we're so grateful that you join us each and every week.
And we're so grateful to Tyndale Momentum for their sponsorship of this week's episode.
Make sure to visit our website, gritandgracethepodcast.com/episode210. There you'll find this week's transcript, a link to order Proverbs 100 Inspirations to Delight an Animal Lover's Heart, and the brand new Proverbs for a Dog Lover's Heart, inspiring stories of friendship, fun, and faithfulness. We also have a link to Jen's website.
And drum roll, that's a wrap for season 2 of Grit and Grace, the podcast.
Woohoo! We'll be back in January for season 3, where we'll be delving into spiritual and personal growth.
I can't wait.
For today, grow your grit.
Embrace God's grace.
And as God reveals the next step to live your one life well,
we'll be cheering you on. So take it.